Blog Talk Radio. What is up? It is the first edition for SNY's TheKnicksBlog.com. We're going to talk some hoops with you. Me, myself, Anthony Riceballs Donahue. I'm joined side by side with my main man, Tommy D. And we are live at the KnicksBlog.com studios. We're going to talk Knicks with you up until 10 o'clock. Tommy, what's going on, man?
Anthony, how's it going, man? Real excited. You know, you talk about guys like Mark Teixeira and guys like K-Rod. You know, you want to even throw in a guy like Mark Sanchez. I'm talking about acquisitions like Tony Riceballs coming on TKB, man. I'm really happy to have you, and awesome, it's really awesome to be with you tonight, my man.
Oh, that's huge. It's a huge addition, Tommy, no doubt about that. We'll also talk to Wilson Chandler in a little bit here on the KnicksBlog.com, the Knicks Blog Radio. Knicks Blog Radio, we'll talk to Brandon Tierney from 1050 ESPN Radio and also SNY's The Wheelhouse at 5:30 and at about 9:25. I want to apologize to the listeners for no music or intro coming in. We'll work on that down the road. We've got to hire some interns, Tommy, to take care of that.
They're going to take care of it. We're going to have some sound. It's going to be great. But listen, when you talk about guys like Wilson Chandler and, of course, you know, your man and mine, BT, really excited to have them both on the show. It's an unbelievable way to kick it off, and let's do it, my man.
Oh, no doubt, Tommy. Now, real quick. This is the 10-year anniversary of the Larry Johnson four-point play. What a moment that was. And before we get into that moment, we'll get into that part later on the show because Wilson Chandler is going to be calling up any minute. I read in your blog just now, you were one of the first people to write about, was that one of the weirdest interviews after a game we've ever seen or what? Besides the fact it was a great moment, I could really care less about the interview. But how funny of an interview was that?
I mean, you know, listen, when you talk about sideline reporters, myself, you know, and I'm not trying to disrespect anybody. You know, I think guys like Al Troutwig do a great job. You know, there are people who can, you know, add salt and pepper to the meal, if you will, you know, for flavor. Obviously, taking a look at somebody with the capability and quality of someone like Aaron Andrews, you know.
Right. We'll get back to that in a few minutes. Right now, on the line, he just finished his second season with the New York Knicks. He wears the number 21. He's a friend of mine. That's Wilson Chandler. Will, what's going on, man?
How you doing, man? I'm good. Just resting up here.
I'm chilling. Where are you right now, actually, Will?
I'm at home, laying in the bed. Just had surgery a couple of days ago, so I'm just resting right now.
Will, you set me up. I think you're going to be a radio guy after you're done playing basketball. You mentioned your surgery. How is the ankle?
Everything's going good. A little tired. Just woke up not too long ago, but I'm doing pretty good. It was something that I needed. It was necessary, but it wasn't nothing major. It was just a minor. I had a couple of bones for it. It took them out. I'd be out.
Was that something you were dealing with all season, or was that something that caught up to you during the season?
I was dealing with not the whole season, but like the last couple months of the season last year.
Now, Will, when the season got over, the Knicks obviously made a lot of strides from last year. The year before, going 23-59. This year, going 32-50. As far as the team and your game, what were some of the biggest improvements you saw?
The biggest improvement is just being a team, first and foremost. You know, I don't think, like, you know, a lot of players wanted to win, you know, and we showed that, you know, this year, you know. Like anything else, there's no more victories. We still didn't make the playoffs, but I think the guys came together more last year, and I think, you know, we're making a good stride for the future.
Well, big season for you, your second year. Obviously, done a lot of great things on the basketball court both ways. You know, I'm sure you pride yourself on being a great defensive player as well as an offensive player. And there's rumors about you moving to the two spot. Obviously, when you look at what's going on with the Magic, with, you know, guys like Turkoglu and Rashard Lewis, just give us an idea and give the fans an idea of, you know, maybe possibly you moving to the two, allowing Danilo Gallinari to play the three along with Harrington, giving you guys a really good long perimeter game, and give us your thoughts about playing the two guard.
For me, you know, whether it's starting or coming off the bench or being in any position, as long as I'm out there, you know, whatever coach asks me to do, whatever my teammates need me to do, I'm going to try to do that. Not saying that I can do anything, but just to try and work hard just to win, you know. And wherever they put me at, you know, I'm feel comfortable, and I'm going to try my hardest, you know, just to be a good teammate, be a good player. So I don't know what coach has planned for the future. You know, I haven't sat down and talked with him specifically about what he's going to do with me next year. So I'm just, you know, just trying to figure out stuff right now, just looking, just watching, just like you are.
Talking with Wilson Chandler right here on the KnicksBlog.com, the Knicks Blog Radio, Anthony Donahue and Tommy D taking you up until 10 o'clock. And, Will, how about your first season playing under Mike D'Antoni? How was that? How is playing for Mike D'Antoni?
Just like everybody else says, man, he's a great guy. I mean, you can't ask for more in a coach, you know, than what he gives. You know, he's a good guy on and off the court. So, you know, it was great, man. You know, and I hope, you know, we play. You know, I play under him for a lot of years to come.
He seems like a real fun guy too, huh, Will?
Oh, he's definitely a fun guy. No jokes and all that. But just like any other coach, when it's time to play, it's time to play. So, you know, it's a place and a time to play. You know, and it's time to get serious sometimes.
Now, one thing I want to ask you about Coach D. Wilson is that a lot of people in the media, and I don't know, I'm not at practice with you guys, although I think I should come to a practice once and show you guys my jump shot. But one thing I want to ask you is that a lot of people in the media and fans say Coach D'Antoni doesn't coach defense. Now, that's not true, is it? Mike does coach defense, right, Wilson?
Yeah, he does coach defense. You know, he's an offensive type of guy, but he prides himself in defense, you know. And the only ways that we can play basketball the way he wants us to play on offense is if we get stops and play defense. We can't push it and get up the court fast. We can't get this defensive stop. So, you know, we have to play defense, you know, to play the way he wants us to play.
Now, Will, I went on the online. I got to do it. I got to sit in front of the computer, and I went to my boy Big C's website at realnicks.com, and all of a sudden Kevin Garnett comes at you. You stand straight up. You go down the lane, and you cock it back. Obviously, one of the big highlights of the year was the dunk on the Celtics. Can you take the fans through exactly what you remember about that moment and your coach pumping the fist afterwards, got the guard and hype? Obviously, it's going to be like that over the next couple of years, but give the fans an idea of exactly how that play unfolded in your memory.
I just remember, I think it was a scramble for the ball at the moment. I think Nate made, somebody made a bad pass, and Nate might have tipped it to me when he was going out of bounds. And when I caught the ball, my mom would just go past, come right and just get the basket, you know. And when I got to the lane, I was just like, man, I might as well just dunk it. And I just went up, you know, and Coach and Nate got more excited than I did. I mean, I just wanted to finish the play.
Well, I got to ask you, and I was actually thinking of that play today as I was driving to work, and I'm always thinking about the Knicks. One thing I want to ask is that I thought of that play, and you yoked it on KG, and you just ran back down the court. You know, you didn't pump your fist. And one thing you don't do, Will, is you don't show a lot of emotion. Is that something that is probably never going to change? You think, you know, you'll get more ready. I don't expect you to be like Nate and go absolutely crazy, but do you think you'll ever show more emotion in your game on the court, or is that just you?
I mean, that's just me, but I can't say I won't, because, you know, never know what's going to happen. Maybe when we're in the finals or in the playoffs, you know. And,
I think it's cool, though. You're like a silent assassin, man.
Yeah, thanks. You know, it's like, I think it's like a spur of the moment thing, you know. One day, you know, when I can, I don't think I accomplished anything yet, so I don't like to celebrate too much, you know. I just wait till like the best moment is like if you win a championship or something like that.
How close do you think are the Knicks to a championship, maybe, and how would you feel about playing with a guy like LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, maybe coming to New York the year after? Obviously, you can't really say any names, but how would it feel to play with a guy that good and maybe you be their second man?
I mean, that would be great. I mean, it would be wonderful. I mean, who wouldn't want to play with guys like that, you know? I love it, you know, first. And I think we had a guy like LeBron or whatever. I think we'd be a definitely good candidate for a finals push.
No question, Will. And give the fans an idea of, you know, what your progress is going to be with the foot, and will we be seeing you? Obviously, you did a ton of work over the last couple of years in Las Vegas in the Summer League. Will fans be seeing you coming up in the Summer League, or just kind of give them an idea? I know maybe too early to tell, but give you.
It's kind of too early to tell, but if not, you know, I'll be back in 8 weeks tops. You know, it's not a real slow progress, because I, you know, it's nothing major. Like I said before, it's just a couple bone spurs. So I'm inactive for a couple weeks, start rehabbing after that, and then 8 weeks I should be back, you know, on the court.
And what's the mindset with the Summer League? You know, you're going into your third year. Is that one of those things where you sure you want to prove yourself, and now you had a good second year? Do you want to get the extra work in? Is that one of those things where you could use the extra reps outside of the Summer League? Does the team say, listen, you know, we want to try to, you know, do some marketing, sell some tickets. We needed some names in there. Give us some idea of what it means for you as a player if you want to play and get the reps or not.
I mean, for a player like me who's on the team like New York, you know, getting the most work, you know, as much as possible, I mean, it's great for me. just the more I play, I think the better I get. And me and Coach talked about it after the season was over. You know, just the more I play and just, you know, stay active, stay healthy, the better I'll be off. You know?
Talking with Wilson Chandler right here on the Knicks Blog Radio and KnicksBlog.com. Wilson, I know you've been tweeting a lot about the playoffs and the NBA Finals. What are your thoughts on the playoffs so far and your assessment of last night's game one between the Lakers and the Magic?
Obviously, everybody had the Lakers and the Cavs in the finals, but
did you too?
I think I wasn't going for anybody in particular. I just, you know,
was that your pick? Was that your prediction though?
From how the Cavs was playing at the end of the season, throughout the whole season, the playoffs. I mean, you know, who wouldn't pick those guys? But Dwight Howard proved himself. You know, they fought. You know, I think they deserve to be in the finals because they beat the team. No excuses. You know, and from watching the game last night, you know, the Lakers are tough. You know, like they're hungry for it and they want it. And I don't think it's going to be easy, though. I don't think it's just going to be a complete shutout. I think the Magic should give them a run for their money because, you know, they have a good team. You know, Dwight, you got Turkoglu, you got Rashad Lewis, you got, you know, Courtney, the young guy, Courtney. And so I think they got a good team. So I don't think it'll be a blowout, but I just can't see them beating the Lakers, though.
Who's harder to guard, Will, LeBron or Kobe? And why?
Both of them pretty hard to guard. I mean, Kobe.
Yeah, I would think.
I mean, LeBron, like, physically, he's just tough to guard. Like, Kobe, I mean, you can stop him, but he has so many moves. Like, he can go to move after move after move after move, and, you know, it's just hard to stop. LeBron, he's just physically just fast and strong and jump, athletic, you know. And I think at one point he's going to get to where Kobe that has a million moves.
Yeah, that one spin move that Kobe had against the Knicks on that Monday night in February, that spin move where you, like, spun the opposite way, that move was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I was guarding. I was actually guarding.
I didn't mean to bring up any nightmares there on your Will.
Nah, I'm good. I mean, it happens. I mean, when we play against players like that, I mean, and that, it's just something like that is just hard. You know, it's just hard to guard. When a player can do moves like that, I mean, you think you got them figured out, you think you got to stop, and then he can just create a whole nother one, like he did yesterday with the post, when he spent, then he double clutched and hit the
hand
off the backboard. Like, that's great defense. Like, you know what I mean? Sometimes it's just, you know, nothing you can do about stuff like that.
Now, I don't know how much you watch college, Will, but obviously there's a lot of people coming out in the draft over the next couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think would be the right fit for the Knicks? Obviously, it's not your decision, but at least, you know, you're going to have a good, solid young player unless they make a trade. Who you like for the team this upcoming season? You don't have to say obviously one after the other, but just, you know, guys who you've seen, who do you like?
That's a lot of good players in the draft, you know. And then, like I said, you know, we don't know what's gonna happen this summer with some of the players or whatever, and what coach wants to do with the team. So, you know, you never know who he thinks is best. You know, we might think somebody's better for the system, but you know, you never know what he's thinking. So I mean, I honestly can't answer that question. But I can't say it's a lot of good talent. I mean, I can name a lot of players that, you know, they can play for.
Does that make you scratch your head when a lot of people in the media are like, it's a weak draft and kids, you know, there's not a lot of good talent out there? Clearly there is.
I don't think it's a such thing as a weak draft. I mean, we had great draft classes, but I don't think it's, you know, it's not a 96 class. It's not a, you know, one of those classes or nothing. But it's not a, I don't think it's necessarily a weak class.
Hey, Will, we could talk a lot more basketball. I know we're up against it, and I know we probably got things to do tonight. I know you tweet a lot. You're into the Twitter as well as myself. I know you were tweeting about some music the other night, and I thought of a question I wanted to ask you. You said you were listening to Illmatic.
Uh-huh.
Illmatic or It Was Written?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with the best album. The best album is Illmatic, but my favorite Nas song is Nas Is Like. So It Was Written. I like the album, but that's my favorite song.
Well, Nas Is Like is actually on I Am, the third album.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I was just going to say that. So I'm going to go with Illmatic. I mean, it's hands down his best CD.
Now, being from Michigan, are you a big Eminem fan?
Yeah, I'm a big Eminem fan. Not because I'm from Michigan, but I'm a big Eminem fan because, you know, his lyrics and all that.
Did you like his new album? Have you heard it?
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, Eminem's, you know,
you think he's gotten a little too crazy?
I mean, you can say that, but I mean, I think it's for entertainment.
Yeah, that's true. And real quick, I'm going to really put you on the spot now. Top five albums of all time.
Top five albums of all time?
Yeah, we can talk more on sports here.
No order, but
well,
I'm going to go top,
I mean,
my,
I
my top
like
five.
Order, but if not, let's hear your top five in no random order.
Get Rich or Die Trying.
Okay.
Illmatic.
Okay.
Reasonable Doubt.
Okay.
All Eyes on Me.
All right.
And Ready to Die.
I would have probably four out of those five. I would probably have It Was Written by Nas instead of All Eyes on Me, because I didn't really get into Tupac too much until after he passed away, but I would throw It Was Written in there and have those five.
We get some 36 Chambers up in there?
Is that what's that?
36 Chambers, man. You gotta have a little.
I love Wu-Tang. Like, I'm the only person where I'm from that probably listens to Wu-Tang.
That changed the game, man.
Yeah, definitely. I like Wu-Tang Forever. Triumph was my song right there.
What do you listen to before a game to get you real fired up?
I listen to a lot of stuff. I mean, Jadi Kiss, Fabolous, Joel Santana. Joel Santana, one of my favorite rappers also. I listen to a lot of Down South, too. I listen to everything. I don't discriminate. I listen to everything.
Oh, yeah, because I had David Lee on, actually, a few months ago, and I was asking him about music, and he was like, I just let Nate Robinson handle that. Is that what Nate does? He just controls the locker room with that stuff, Will?
I mean, he listens to it. He listens to everything too, but he listens a little bit more than I listen to. So I mean, he plays some good songs, but I'd rather just have my headphones on, listen to my own.
You
all
open
right,
up the door with Nate. Well, real quick about Nate, what are your thoughts? Obviously, I know it's tough to talk about. You know, who knows whether he's gonna be back or not. But give us an idea, the fans' idea about what Nate brings to the team, and you know what his future may have.
Before I even get to any of the core stuff, I mean, just off the court, you know, he just brings that friend feeling, like, you know, you got a friend you can trust, you know, he's a good guy. I mean, he's a funny guy. I mean, he's just one of the guys that, you know, you can tell, like, he's a genuine guy. And then on the court, I mean, scoring, intensity, you know, hustle plays, all that, it's Nate, you know, high action plays, you know, just Nate, like, that's what he does.
You still have that jacket that he wrote on that one night, Will?
Yeah, I had the jacket, the hat, my shoes.
Have you worn it since that night?
No, I haven't worn it, but I still have it.
Can I get the jacket the first preseason game?
Yeah, you can definitely have it, yes.
That'd be dope. And one more basketball question since we got you still on, Will. Have you talked to Eddie Curry? I hear he's been doing well out in Detroit. He even sent me a message on Twitter, said he's been really working hard, and I really hope he is.
Yeah, I talked to him a few times, but I don't like to really getting to too many people's business, like, about basketball. I mean, he told me he's doing good and all that. We talked, basically just, like, how you been doing, like, when next time you're going to Chicago. But, you know, like, from the team doctor and all that, and they said they went out to see him. He's doing great. He's looking great.
He knows the team a lot. He can score.
Yeah, Eddie's definitely a talented player, you know. And just from looking at his Twitter, you know, it seems like he's doing good. So, you know, I'm a type of guy who wants everybody to do good, so I definitely wish him the best and hope he's back, you know, playing next year.
Definitely. And actually, the year before you got here, Will, Eddie scored 20 a game in the 06-07 season, and he was born.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, I was watching. You know, I always been a fan of Eddie, you know, because I'm, like, not too far away from him, a couple hours away from him.
He was dominant
that
season, one of the best low post players in the league. I mean, every time he got the ball, he was getting double teamed. He played great that season.
Right.
All right, Will, thanks for giving us a couple minutes, and I really appreciate it, man.
Anytime.
And
thanks a lot, Will. Look forward
to that jacket, too.
Okay, I'll see you guys later.
All right, Will.
Look forward to the offseason, and we'll talk to you next year. Thanks, man.
All right, thanks.
That was New York Knicks guard/forward Wilson Chandler appearing live on the KnicksBlog.com, Knicks Block Radio. Anthony Riceballs, Donnie with Tommy D, taking you up until 10 o'clock. TD, Will joining us on the first show. How about that?
The silent assassin, man, but the best way to put it. The guy does things on the basketball floor both ways that, you know, offensively and defensively, that any coach would love. He's going to get minutes because he's a matchup problem for people offensively, and he can guard multiple positions. So clearly he's a guy who's definitely a big part of the future. You just have to wonder, you know, if they want to get rid of an Eddie Curry's contract or whatever, do they trade Wilson? You know, it's something that we can't really talk to him about because it's obviously out of his control. But for the time being, you know, Wilson's a really strong part of this organization and a really good guy, and we appreciate him coming on for sure.
I've thought about that, Tommy, actually. You know, let's say, for the sake of conversation, Chris Bosh is available this summer via trade, and Donnie Walsh is talking to Toronto, or even anybody, just for the sake of this conversation, and another GM, Colangelo, or whoever says, Steve Kerr, hey, we'll give you this guy, you got to give us this contract, but we want Wilson Chandler, too. That would be a tough spot for Donnie Walsh.
Right now, the luxury Walsh has, and there's Mr. Walsh has, there's really not a lot in terms of, you know, I believe he has to make a move. My thing with Walsh is that there's a good chance that Cleveland's going to go out and try. And, again, this is a lot about LeBron, and we've heard a lot of stuff on the blog, you know, stop talking about LeBron, he's not coming, blah, blah, blah. He's still very much in play. If a guy like Chris Bosh is available, Wilson's not the guy who's going to be the one who GMs are going to look at. Could be a David Lee because the contracts have to match. Eddie Curry, again, the luxury for Donnie Walsh. Eddie Curry is an unknown commodity right now. I mean, he's 2 years after the fact of being a really solid
What I'm saying is, if another GM were to say,
nobody's taking Curry.
Think anybody's taking Curry. What I'm saying is that another GM could say, all right, we'll take this amount of money back, and you know what? If we're going to give you Chris Bosh, throw in Wilson Chandler. And we'll get into more of that later as the show goes on, and also with our next guest right now from 1050 ESPN Radio, also from SNY's The Wheelhouse, weekdays at 5:30. That's the one and only BT, Brandon Tierney. BT, what's going on, man?
What's up, boys? How we doing?
Not bad. I got to tell you, we just had Wilson Chandler on, and the knock on Will with me and all his boys at the game and stuff, that I cannot interview him for more than 5 minutes. Will was on for almost 20, rapping like it was nothing.
Really?
Oh, Brandon, I have never heard Wilson talk like that.
He wouldn't shut up, did he?
How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing great. Wilson wouldn't shut up. Rice Balls got him, he's got him open. He couldn't believe it.
Oh, that's why he's Rice Balls. That's why he's the man. He's such a good kid, but I got to go back and hear that interview because he doesn't say a whole lot. He's a shy kid, as many of us know. So good for you. That's cool, man. I think a lot of people want to know more about him because a lot of people like his game and nobody really knows him too much, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. I had him, you know, we talked a lot of basketball. I said his ankle's doing good, and we talked about music at the end. He talked about his top 5 rap albums of all time, and he wouldn't stop. He was talking about this song and that song, and obviously a lot of basketball stuff, playing for Coach D'Antoni, Kobe, and LeBron. And then he was talking about how the difference between guarding Kobe and LeBron, and how Kobe, he said, Kobe, you can actually stop, sort of, but LeBron, you can't because he's a physical freak.
Makes sense. You know, if Kobe's having a night where his jump shots aren't dropping, you know, you can pester him into a 7 for 19, but, you know, LeBron gets ticked off and he puts his head down and he goes, he'll just go right to the rim and you can't stop him. I hear you.
I mean, you and I have talked about, and obviously I appreciate you coming on and giving me the interview the other day. Great interview today with Derek Harper, one of my guys. I'm a big Mark Jackson guy as well, and I know, you know, being a St. Francis Prep guy, obviously you are too, Queens in the house, of course. But for me, when you talk about LeBron not coming definitively, I'm confused because I know how smart and how good you are. He's still in play, man. He's still in play. You know he's still in play.
Well, I mean, listen, I'm putting a lot of stock in a couple things, and in the Q&A that we did for the website, I leaned on this as well. First of all, a lot of it's gut, guys. There's no doubt. I mean, I'm not pretending to know anything that's outside of, you know, the whispers and the innuendos that we get in the business that isn't out there yet. Nobody knows. You're right. So to be so definitive, Tommy, I can see why you would ask me that. I never really thought he was coming here. I think the pull of his hometown is a lot stronger than people think. And, you know, I don't see him just picking up and coming to a team that hasn't made any progress. Now, if they make some progress, if he gets frustrated and they take a step back next year, the Cavs, and they probably will, unless they get somebody else, you know, listen, things could change. But right now, you know, early June 2009, I'm standing by that. I don't think he's coming. But you know what? I hope I'm wrong.
As I do as well. For me, it's one of those deals where, you know, the guy could probably outgrow his hometown. More importantly, it's a branding issue. It's a business issue. He's going to have to sit down with, you know, his agent. He's going to have to sit down with Phil Knight. He's going to have to sit down with guys who are going to say, listen, if you go to New York, there's some serious bread. And it's going to be one of those things where he's going to be able to grow up. Remember Tiger signing the American Express contract? He went from a, you know, he completely changed his image. And I know you're a big golf guy. Tiger, that's what he's trying. He's trying to get to that ridiculous branding. I just can't see him doing it in Cleveland. And maybe
yeah, that's hold on. Let me ask you this, Tom.
He's already a megastar.
Absolutely. I mean, this isn't like Jay Buhner with the Mariners years ago. I mean,
or Vladimir Guerrero with the Expos.
Good point, man. Exactly. I mean, first of all, we're going to, by the time he's front and center, Kobe's going to be another year older, okay? Shaq, well, not that Shaq matters now, but he'll probably be gone. Duncan will be just about shot. It doesn't matter where he plays. Do you really think that he needs to come here to get any sort of endorsement that he wants? Do you really think that?
I think the NBA wants him here, though.
Yeah, well, okay, even if that's true, and I'm not saying that you're wrong with that, do you think the NBA is going to tell him what to do? And even if they did, do you think he's going to listen?
To be honest, I can see, here's my thing. If Donnie can bring a guy, if he can beat Cleveland to the punch from a 1A standpoint, because Cleveland has zero assets. They have no, they got nothing. So right now they're relying on a lot, maybe adding a here, pinch there, pinch here. But at the end of the day, they still have to get past Boston. They have to get past, with a healthy Garnett, they've got to get past Orlando, who's making serious strides. You know, that's really the two teams in the East that you're looking at, plus beating Kobe in the finals with Big Z a year older. If Donnie can somehow bring in, or at least position them, to bring in a 1A, he's really got to be excited about what's going on here, or everything else included.
You know what? Get me that 1A, and then maybe I'll think about changing my mind.
I think one thing Nick Vance, Brandon, and Tommy, and he really needs to worry about is if, for some reason, and it's a possibility that the Cavs can win a championship next year, there's absolutely no way he's coming because LeBron is too smart and too swift to win a championship on, like, you know, June 22nd and leave to come to New York June 9th. I mean, that just wouldn't happen. So Nick,
I agree. That's a good point. See, a lot of people, you know, said this and wrote about this. You know, what should Knicks fans, where should their rooting interests lie during the previous series with the Magic? And, you know, some people, respected people who know the score, you know, kind of said that, hey, you should hope for him to win because if he wins, he'll felt as if he delivered his championship, mission accomplished, he can move on. I always thought it was the opposite. If there's any chance, you have to hope that situation gets worse. If he wins, he's definitely not going.
Well, I think maybe if they were to win this year and maybe get bounced in the second round next year, it'd be easier because then he could say, all right, I got you guys one in 09, I'm going to move on. But if he wins one next year, name one athlete in the four major sports that – a star athlete that won a championship and left their team 3 weeks later. I can't think of one. Can you, Brandon?
Well, I'm sure there's a few
left
Yankees.
Left him that way. Yeah. John Wetland? I don't know. I mean,
no, good question. You know, good question.
I mean, that would be tough to win it, but if they get bounced in the second round, I mean, there's always a possibility.
I don't think they're moving in the right direction. I know Mo Williams had an awful series, and he's better than that. And I liked Mo a lot with the Bucks, and a lot of people didn't. I mean, we got to watch him because we're NBA fans and broadcasters, but a lot of, you know, fringe and average fans didn't really see Mo Williams with Michael Redd because Redd was hurt, and the Bucks weren't really good. Mo Williams could ball, so he's a little better than this. But I mean, once he got off to the start that he had, and he was, you know, 31%. They have no shot, man. I mean, the matchups, and truth of the matter is that, I don't know if you guys are with me on this, if they played that series 10 times, the Cavs are going to win 8. I mean, the Magic are going to win 8. I just think the Magic are a much better team than the Cavaliers, no?
I totally agree, and I think that when you talk about Van Gundy, let's face it, Van Gundy absolutely undressed Mike Brown, who's a great defensive coach, but Van Gundy, much like his brother, is an unbelievable X and O's guy. So for me, here's the thing with Cleveland, they didn't have any injuries. They had no excuses, BT. Like, that's for me, like, when at the end of the day, well, Cleveland didn't have this and, you know, this guy didn't. No, they were healthy. They were good. Now they're going to be a year older with no flexibility and no assets. How can they win next year? And I agree with what you guys are saying about if LeBron wins, there's no way you can go to the parade and then right afterwards say, hey, I'm out of here, I'm going to the Madison Square Garden. I agree with that. But at the end of the day, what are they going to do to improve next year to have them win next year?
I got something for you guys. What if you're the Cavs right now, and you sit back and you say, okay, financially there's only so much we could do in terms of bringing in players. Okay, maybe we could swing a trade, maybe we can get Bosch, whatever. But if we can't get a player, what about if you fire Mike Brown and you just try to get the biggest name coach?
You know, Brandon, I was thinking about that. I said to my friend who lives in Cleveland, could Mike Brown be the first coach of the year to get whacked? Because I thought in the finals and in the conference finals, I don't know, I wasn't there. I was watching on TV. I thought, and I hate to make these assessments because I really don't know what's going through the guy's head. I thought Mike Brown looked lost at times. Did you feel the same way?
You know what? It's tough to characterize it. Just like when a hitter in baseball, and I'm watching the Mets now, they're in a tight game. When you're like 1-for-19, it kind of looks like you're not trying.
Right,
when your team's, when your team's missing jump shots, it looks like you're not prepared. When in reality, you could have put together an amazing game plan that if you guys hit some shots, maybe you would have won. So I don't know if I'd say he was lost. I certainly don't think he's an elite coach by any stretch. I mean, he's more toward the bottom third in my opinion. But is there a coach that you can lure there? What about if they gave Mike Krzyzewski? Well, think about this.
I would just forget Van Gundy. How about Van Gundy? He's the top guy in the list.
Nah, that's not
LeBron
a good style.
LeBron would hate him offensively. He would hate him offensively.
I agree. I'm with you. No way. But what about the connection from the gold medal team with Coach K? What if they finally, because Duke's going backwards. You know that, Tommy. They're going backwards.
For sure. My thing with Van Gundy is that at least he'll be able to draw up a side out of bounds play that isn't the same one over and over and over and over, and have to force LeBron into making a miraculous half court shot. They ran that same play 100 times in a row. From a tactician standpoint, Van Gundy is fantastic.
There's no creativity. Yeah, for Brown, there's no creativity from the chalkboard point of view. But I love listening to Jeff on the broadcast, and I respect the hell out of him as a coach. I do. But we can't say that Jeff's an elite coach when you can't get with Yao Ming and T-Mac to one second round. Come on.
They couldn't stay healthy for a season either. But I kind of agree with Brandon. I love Jeff Van Gundy more than anybody, but he was great out of a timeout. But granted, they did have Patrick Ewing, but what offense did the Knicks ever really run? Bring the ball up to the court. Houston, to Ewing, pick and roll. His offensive creativity really isn't there. But also, you had Patrick Ewing, who just dominated the ball in the post.
And wasn't a real good passer either.
No.
Right, exactly. And talking about the game last night, Brandon, did you think a lot of the analysts said that the Magic, we talk about LeBron, obviously, all day, and we will for the next 13 months. A lot of the analysts said that Stan Van Gundy should have taken out Jameer Nelson after 3 minutes, but some also said he should have played the whole quarter like he did. What did you think of Jameer Nelson playing the whole quarter? Does Orlando still have a shot?
No. Magic are not winning this series. I don't think they have much of a chance. Now, listen, there's going to be, you would think, at least one or two games where Dwight Howard puts up, 31, 32 points and 12, 13 rips and swats a few shots, and they'll probably do that at Amway Arena. They'll win a game or two max there, and then I think it's lights out. But the whole thing with Jameer Nelson, going in, I would not have activated him. I completely disagreed with that move.
Not activated even?
No.
Really?
Well, for what?
Maybe a home court game three, down 2-0, gets off the bench, the crowd goes crazy, brings the team some emotion, I don't know.
He looked pretty good last night.
He didn't look bad.
First of all, he was minus 19 in point differential, and he was 3-for-9 from the field. If that's good, then I don't want to see bad. I mean, that's not good. I understand he's important, and I like Jameer Nelson. I like him better than Ray for Alston, but he's so rusty. So, to answer the question, guys, I would not have activated him. That might not be popular, but I would not have done it. But if you decided to activate him, once you made the decision to insert him early, I think it made sense to play him as many minutes as they did, because at least you could say, you know what, this game's shot. We're getting our heads kicked in. Let's allow Jameer to get some game action and kind of get away from the rust. So
I actually felt bad for Skip last night, because I thought he's done a great job since he came to Orlando at the deadline.
Who's this? Oh, Ray Ferry. Oh, he's done a great job. No question.
I like Skip. I've always liked him.
But yeah, he could shoot you out of the game, though.
Oh, he can. He definitely can.
For me, with Skip, again, it's one of those deals where he's only been there half a year. So now you don't know what his psyche is, and you know Stan Van Gundy's one of those guys that's a real mental guy. And to add, you know, another guy, obviously Nelson's been there a long time, so, you know, the old adage, BT, as you know, is, okay, let's – guy doesn't lose his position based on the fact that there was an injury, but Rayford's hitting threes. That's what they've relied on. You know, that's one of those deals where they just start making threes, and they weren't doing it last night. I think Nelson being there had a lot to do with that.
And that's going to be one of the keys to the series. And, you know, it's funny. I remember I had Tim Legler on the show. I guess it was the night before Game 1 for the Eastern Conference Finals, and he was going with the Cavs, and a lot of people were, and he felt good about it. And, you know, I've been wrong on a lot of things, but I happen to like the Magic very strongly for this whole series going in. And the thing that we disagreed on, and eventually kind of came around as the series progressed, was the matchups. I mean, that doesn't go away, man. And you look at, and this is why it's changing in this series, the Magic can just spot up and run their offense and flip it around the perimeter and set a couple of ball screens and have Rashard and Hedo move without the ball and two jump shots over small guys. Mo Williams, small. Delonte West, small. Now all of a sudden, you run the same offense. You're not going to dramatically change your offense. But now, instead, you got Ariza, who's not only a great defender, but he's 6'8". Then, he's just got different personnel. And people say, well, the Magic missed a lot of open shots. Yeah, they did. And they'll hit a few more of those. But when you have a guy who's 6'2", and you're 6'9", you're 6'3", you don't even flinch. You got the same body type with 4 more inches. Even if he's 5 feet away from you, there's a presence and you contest the shot more. I just don't think the Magic have a chance to win this series.
Brandon, you brought up Trevor Ariza, and we're talking to Brandon Tierney live right here on the KnicksBlog.com, the Knicks Block Radio, Anthony Donahue with Tommy D taking you up until 10. Brandon, you brought up Trevor Ariza, and I'm going to take you back in time about 3 years. Let's just say it's December 05 right now. And I say, Brandon, assess Trevor Ariza for me now, and then assess him right now as he is. And I know what your answer would be 3 years ago because I was with you every day. But
yeah, for
the fans that maybe didn't hear you 3 years ago, Brandon, it's November 05. Tell me about Trevor Ariza. What do you think of him?
It's funny. Well, this is funny.
I mean, your exact quote. So,
ridiculous.
I agree with you.
Well, I mean, I remember, you know, I did St. John's for a bunch of years. What was it, 4 or 5 years? And during the down years for St. John's, which I guess they're still down. They definitely are. Not guess, they are, unfortunately. And the year that Jarvis, that Mike got fired, before Norm was hired, they had the Kevin Clark took over the team. And they played UCLA at the Garden on a Saturday. And somehow, you know, UCLA, I believe that was Ben's first year. I think it was his first year, Ben Howland. And somehow St. John's won. Little story short, Ariza played that game, had like 17 or 18 points, maybe 16 or 17 points. And I remember on draft night, you know, I was doing a show on 1050, which I did for a couple of years, the draft stuff. And when the Knicks picked their guy, I mean, I knew Ariza's name for sure, but I'm like, not really don't have a whole lot to say right now. And just, you know, I wasn't that familiar. He played 1 year in college. And when I saw him in person, and you and I both liked him, long, lean, could defend and wanted to defend and could finish. Now, personally, I looked at his handle. I said, I looked at his jump shot, didn't like it. You know, he's expanded his game. But you know what? Isaiah identified him as, and he was right. Isaiah Thomas was right on the reason, no doubt.
That description that you just mentioned of him is a guy like we just had a guy that sounded a lot like that description on the phone a little while ago, right, with Wilson, and you know, we can do both things. I can't believe every time I open my eyes and Kobe dishes it to Ariza, his shot is somehow become so pure. And I remember I wrote something about it on SNY. You know, you can't judge a rookie by, you know, clanking and missing jumpers and stuff. Guys can develop. Rondo's another guy. Those guys who, as we talk about the draft moving forward, players can develop under the right situation. So now as we move to the Knicks, BT, I know you mentioned Sabeet the other day, but honestly, as you look at what the Knicks need, which is a ton, you just had a guy on the radio today in Derek Harper. There's a guy, Holiday. There's a couple of guards who are relatively rugged that could be there.
Mm-hmm.
What does Donnie do? I know you mentioned Sabeet before. I just wanted to get a little bit more clarity out of that.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. Listen, Sabeet, And we all know they have to jump up a few spots to get him. He's certainly not going to be there at 8. And even if they moved up to, say, 5, he might not be there. The reason I say Fabete, and I understand that you need guards to run the system, and if you can draft the right guard, then you can allow Nate Robinson to walk, and you can re-sign Lee, and then you can maybe do a sign-and-trade and use Nate, maybe get Bosch, maybe get Amari. There's a lot of things you can do at that point. But you look at the NBA and you look at the Knicks for over a decade now, and it's an embarrassment. I mean, how people nightly just waltz to the rim, no fear of getting fouled, no fear of getting hit. I mean, no resistance. Just whatever they want to do, they do. And as good as Lee is on the window, he's a terrific rebounder. Guys go right by him, and they go right over him, and they go right around him. So where is the defensive presence? And you know, certain things you need. In baseball, if you can't pitch, you stink. And in basketball, if you can't defend your rim, you stink. No, and the Knicks stink. And I think that that's a big part of it because they just can't defend.
Brandon, you mentioned to be, and I do think I would love to get a big guy in the middle that can block a shot, but I do think the Knicks probably will go with a guard because I always feel like they always do. And the five guards that I believe the Knicks are looking at would be Curry, Holiday, Lawson, Jennings, and Flynn. Can you rank those guys from 1 to 5?
Yeah, well, I mean, in terms of personal preference, I have Johnny Flynn very high. I would actually put Johnny Flynn 1 or 2, but that's not what the Knicks are thinking. They're not. He's dropping. They're not as enamored with him as I am. So I would probably put Flynn.
He's a tough
5.
Kid too, right?
Say that again, man.
He's a tough kid. I feel.
Oh, he's all heart, man. I mean, that's why I like him so much because he's not that big. He's only 6 feet when they measured him, but he's you know, the guy could play all night. Remember the game at the Garden, of course. And he's a warrior, bro, and I like him a lot. But you know, projecting, I'm not sure if he projects the way I kind of wish he would. Yeah, it's almost more like a sentiment. There's more sentimentality as I evaluate him. Not that he's not going to be good, but I don't know if he's really a top 8 pick when you really cut the nut. Jennings, you know, and this is the problem with the draft. I mean, what exactly did Brandon Jennings do that I missed? I mean, did he do something of great significance outside of going to going to Europe because of Sonny Vaccaro? I mean, what did he do? He didn't even play that well. And I know he's going up against grown men, and if you don't play well and you're an American, you're going to find yourself on the bench. There's politics. I get all that. But, well, I mean, talk about blind faith. Lawson, there's no way the Knicks are taking Lawson. That's not happening. So, Rubio, they're not, unless they move up to get him. I mean, the order would be Rubio. Who's the other one, Ant? Who's the fifth of them?
Steph Curry.
I would say Rubio, Curry.
Holiday.
Holiday. I'd even put Rubio there because he's going to be there for the Knicks to take.
Then I would still probably right now, thinking what the Knicks are thinking, probably Curry and Holiday 1-2. Maybe you could even flip that with Lawson and probably Jennings 3rd, possibly 2nd, because there's intrigue, and then Lawson and Flynn, who the Knicks will not draft.
Am I talking to two people who don't read the blog? Tariq Evans is in the picture as well. BT, they've done extensive background on Evans. Comes from somebody who's very close to Tariq. He's in play, which, you know, he's not a true 1. He can guard the 1 and 2 and even 3. Your thoughts on Tariq Evans?
Very intriguing. Very.
Right.
Now, well, you say I don't read the blog, but the question was there was 5 names thrown at me. That wasn't one of them. Exactly. I like him a lot. I like him a lot. And, you know, there's one thing that you know that you're getting with Calipari, man. You spend a year with John. For the most part, you're going to be ready to play some ball in the NBA. There's an element of the coaching that pops up every day in practice, and he does that better than a lot of people give him credit. Not that he pumps out all these pros, but for the most part, the pros he puts out are pretty decent. I like him. He's long. He's lean. He's got a sick wingspan. I like to see the jump shot a little bit more. But you're right. I mean, that's one thing that you can work on. You can't really get tougher. You're either if you're soft, you're soft. You can't really increase or improve court sense if you don't have that innate skill, but you could always flip in 1,000 jump shots a day and become decent. And, you know what? I would throw him in the mix. I think the Knicks will take a long look at him. I would count him in. I think you're right.
Now, from what I hear as well, that that the Toronto Raptors are completely enamored. Obviously, they pick right behind the Knicks at 9. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that, and I wrote this the other day, that, you know, Holiday's gone, you know, and Curry's gone, as we all agree that we think that they're the top two right now to beat. We can throw Thabeet in there as well, which, you know, I'm not a huge Thabeet guy, but I can see him at 8 being a decent value pick.
Real quick, Tommy, why don't you like Thabeet? Well, what about him don't you like? Because you've been saying this from day one.
I just find him so soft, and when you, especially in this town, when you bring a guy in, and Curry's a great example of, you know, Curry's you can almost flip them. Curry's a great offensive player and is easily one of the worst defensive big men that I've ever seen. And when you bring in a guy, you still have that Ewing shadow. You really do, even though that, you know, the game has been bringing in D'Antoni, the game has definitely shifted into more of a space and open court type of deal. I don't think the beat offensively has any opportunity or any chance to be, certainly one-on-one he can be okay, but he'll trudge down the floor. He may be able to set a screen.
Wait. What do you mean trudge? This guy's an athlete. This is not Roy Hibbert of Georgia. This kid played soccer in Tanzania. He is an athlete.
He's a good athlete at 7'3", no question, BT. For me, I don't like to see him on the floor every game writhing in pain. I mean, the guy, he's a cupcake. You know that. I mean, he's...
What if somebody said that it's... And here's the difference between him and Curry. Yeah, Curry is immeasurably better in terms of offensive skill than instinct, no doubt. But Eddie, as we all know, doesn't even forget about loving basketball. He barely likes it.
Exactly.
He was a singer in high school.
Exactly. What if I said the Beats work ethic was beyond impressive? Would you be a little more intrigued?
I would love to hear that. I've been looking around, and I haven't heard one really good workout from Thabeet. I've heard a lot of stuff about Holiday. I've heard a lot of, you know, Givony and guys from Draft Express who are excellent in Hoops, mm-hmm. you know, Hoops World. Those guys are really, really on top of in an all workout. I haven't heard one thing about Thabeet, negatively or positively, which leads me to believe that, you know, he's 7'3", BT. This is a point guard draft. Big men go top one, top two all the time in drafts, and he's not guaranteed in the top three, at least from what I'm understanding.
Well, he's going top three, but we also – when was the last time – I don't even really know if I think that Blake Griffin's going to be as good as some people do, but from a collegiate point of view, when was the last time we had a guy like Blake Griffin coming out? I mean, that's why he's not going number one.
Blake Griffin, without question, once you realize that he was definitely closer to 6'10 than 6'7, I mean, he is an absolute steamroller coming down the lane in the pick and roll in the NBA. I mean, that's a no-brainer. I mean, he's an animal. And if he develops a decent mid-range game, he's going to be a fantastic NBA player to me. You know, I mean, that's, I believe, what everybody else is thinking as well. But Thabeet, you can't take a chance on a guy who could sit on the bench. For me, in D'Antoni's system, can he play 30 minutes in D'Antoni's system? And
not as a rookie. No, not really.
But that's my point. Is that he's got to be able to play 30 minutes for them to make the playoffs. They got to make the playoffs this year.
So here's the thing. So let me make an end. Do you believe this too? Because I mean, we're all big Knick guys, and we all want the Knicks to do well, and we all grew up as Knick fans for sure, and still root for them and want to see good basketball. There's different philosophies. My philosophy is, yeah, okay, the playoffs would be nice next year. It'd be very nice. But the bigger issue for me is drafting a guy who might very well be able to block 4 shots a game.
Yeah, that would be great. The Knicks haven't had a guy block a shot since Mutombo was here in 03 and 04 for a little while. And the bottom line is, you know,
and he played 25
I'm not
minutes.
Sure who I want the Knicks to get yet, but Wilson Chandler can't be your best shot blocker. That just can't happen. And if he could play 20 to 25 minutes tonight and block, like BT said, 3 or 4 shots, that starts so many fast breaks. And in the fast break, how many times running a fast break are actually 5 guys are around the circle running the break? Not often. One guy needs to start it.
Trust
so
Donnie.
If he could block 3 or 4 shots a game playing 20 minutes tonight, that would be amazing.
Donnie will find him. For me, then you're talking about different philosophies. I'm totally with you guys. But for me, I know that Donnie can find a guy somewhere along the line.
He's going to be available.
We know for a fact that he wanted Camby in the Randolph deal. He walked away from the table in that situation when Dunleavy said that Camby was not available, and he went back to the table and ended up doing the deal.
Yeah, but Tom, let me ask you. Tom, let me ask you a question. You just said, you know, you're confident that Donnie's going to find a guy, and I'm not saying that I'm not confident, but I mean, what are the championship rings that Donnie Walsh has produced that allows us to just give him the benefit of the doubt? I mean, where are those guys? And where are the rings, and where are the guys outside of Rick Smith's? You know, I mean, what, the Davis brothers? I mean, who exactly did he draft as big men that were really good?
Well, you know, you got a lot out of Smith's, but I think the game has changed, and if the game was still the same, then I think the beat would be a good, you know, Smith's mold. And I don't like comparing players, but, you know, I get that. A big guy who can –
Smith had that
the difference. Smith could shoot, man.
Yeah,
to beat,
the Smith
you know,
could shoot.
But that, you know, again, it's development. It's, you know, and I agree with BT that, you know, there definitely has to be a player that you take now that is going to help you both now but also down the road. I think the beat could come in and maybe play 20 minutes a game and sure block two shots a game. You know, and I'm more inclined to think that he is a Roy Hibbert, you know, than a Rick Smith. But you know,
better athlete than Roy Hibbert. Roy Hibbert's great. He is nailed to the ground. And I, you know what? And I think that's where we disagree. I'm not saying Hibbert's going to be 20 points, 15 rebounds. He's not Dwight Howard. He's not going to be that guy. But he's an athlete. See, he played soccer for 14 years. His hand, not hand-eye, his hand-foot coordination is terrific. And the reason why you're not hearing anything, guys, about his workouts is because everybody knows he's big and he's athletic. The book is out on him. The other guys, you got to watch their jump shots. You got to see how they fight through pick and rolls, how they dish, their court sense. That's why the guards, the evaluation process right now for these guards, because it's a guard draft, that's where all the buzz and all the juice is. We already know it. The people who watched Roy Hibbert at UConn, they already know what he is. So, you know, I like him. Some people don't. We'll see.
Brandon, very quickly with BT, like, do you think Herb Williams is the guy that's going to take the beat to that level? You know, and if so, then you take him. If you don't, they don't have a big man coach. Who doesn't like Herb? Honestly, who doesn't like Herb? But if you're going to put the beat into that situation, wouldn't you rather bring a guard into that situation to learn under D'Antoni? And I think that's the direction that they're looking at.
And philosophically, that makes sense. All I'm saying, so that's kind of different.
I think we know they're going to take a guard at the end of the day.
Well, I mean, listen, they could make a trade.
They could.
They can make a trade. I mean, Nate, you guys don't think Nate's coming back. There's no way Nate's coming back.
I think there's a chance he's coming back, but I think Nate comes back if he thinks he can get a lot more money, he gets lowballed around the league.
He's not coming back.
And BT, I said it when I was at the game.
I just said maybe that would be the way he would come back.
I was in the game against Phoenix. I saw him get teed up after the dunk. I saw the look that Dolan gave, and I saw the look that D'Antoni gave, more importantly. They don't get along. And listen, he's a very good player. There's no question about that. What is his market value? I don't know. But we talk about trades. Let's just say, you know, Curry's off the board. Holiday's off the board. They've got Evans, who you know that Toronto is interested in.
Mm-hmm.
They try to make a move a couple weeks later after the draft and say, all right, we'll give you David Lee. We'll give you Evans. You give us Chris Bosh. Do you make that deal? Think about it. They get 89, and they get Lee.
No, I'm not as high on Bosch's. I don't know how long Bosch's knee is going to hold up, to be honest with you.
Right.
I liked Chris Bosh a whole lot more. Actually, 2 years ago, I loved him. Last year, I really started to see some cracks in the armor. I would have to really think about that. My instincts initially say no. I prefer Amari.
But Amari has a knee history problem.
I understand that.
He had the surgery. Also, he has the eye problem, too.
Yeah, but he even said, you know, first of all, I mean, it provided his eye. I mean, these are things you can easily check out. If his eye is okay, and, you know, it seems like he's about 90% of the way back with that. But the knee, at least, was and that's now a couple of years in the rearview mirror, guys. It's not like it happened last year. He has come back from that when he played only a couple of games, and then he got hurt 3 years. Was it 3 years ago?
2005. He was out the 2005-2006 season. That's when D'Antoni did his best job, I think, ever coaching that year.
But he's come back and he's demonstrated that he's explosive. And everybody that I asked, Derek Harper, I asked the same question. He said Amari. I asked Tim Legler. He said Amari. Not one person said Chris Bosh. Don't you find that kind of interesting? No, we think
no,
we
I
know
do,
a
I
lot.
Definitely do.
Well, what about guys who played in the NBA who were saying that?
No, that's very interesting. A lot of people, and it's funny when you talk about 2010, you always hear LeBron, Wade, Bosh. Bosh, Wade, LeBron. You never hear LeBron, Wade, Amari, or those sports. Always those three you always hear together. Obviously, LeBron and Wade being one and two.
Yeah, which is ridiculous, which is why I couldn't wait to have Amari on the other day. And, I mean, I just teed him up with a question, and he knocked it out. I mean, he was very – you heard that, Tom. I know you wrote about that. And he's right. I do think he's better than Bosh. But also, I would hope that Chris Bosh would say, no, I'm better than Amari. I mean, that's the mentality of an athlete.
Brandon, real quick, we only have about 4 minutes left. 10 years ago today, Larry Johnson – hit kind of a big shot. Where were you when that shot happened, and how surprised were you, and what was going through your head?
I was actually, what was going through my head? I had just, I was just starting my career, literally just starting. And I was over at Fox here in Manhattan, and I still don't even know what I did that day. Somehow they put me in this big control room, and I was in charge of like 10 national feeds, and I was praying to God that nothing went wrong, because if it did, I didn't know how to fix it. Thank God nothing went wrong.
You wanted to watch the game.
Well, what happened was, I was there for a couple hours, and I wanted to get home because my tradition was always to watch the game in the basement with my old man, and I didn't have time to make it back, so I went to a restaurant, and it was weird because nobody, the game was on, but nobody was really going nuts. It was like they were so distracted. I remember sitting at this bar. I didn't even have a drink. I just sat there and I watched it. And it was a formal place because it was right near, And I just went berserk. And everybody's looking at me. I'm like, what? You're not a Knicks fan? What, are you kidding me? Did you see that shot? I don't think really many. The people in the restaurant did not appreciate it as much as the three people having this conversation. That's for damn sure.
No, that was an amazing moment in Knick history. That was just – I think Allen Houston's shot was better because I actually won the series, but I think I actually went crazier when Larry hit the shot just because, like, you knew the foul was called, whether Antonio fouled him or not is irrelevant. You knew the foul was called, so you had that 0.3 seconds to be like, oh, there was a foul. He's getting three shots, and then boom, it just – explosion, pandemonium, hell broke loose at the Garden.
And it was ironic. It was ironic because the one guy who was always, half a knucklehead was Chris Childs, and here's Childs, the one trying to restore order and get him back to the free throw line and calm him down. Hey, the job's not done yet. You got to hit this free throw. And it was Chris Childs, as we all know, who was, making sure. But as soon as, Childs hugged him, you could see LJ. He knew that the job wasn't –
He was like, get away.
Exactly. Yep.
So all Knicks fans out there listening to the KnicksBlog.com, Knicks Block Radio, real quick today, you could be by yourself or in front of somebody. Just throw up the L real quick just for about 2 seconds. Throw up the L. Give Larry some love.
Yeah, Larry was – I miss Larry. Larry Johnson.
He was a character. And how about the interview after the game with Jim Gray? That was a classic interview.
Oh, when he was sweating all over him?
Yeah, it was just funny. It was just, you got to – watch it. It's a funny interview.
And Mike
Larry was he had the beard, right? He was rocking the chin strap.
Yeah,
he
had the whole playoffs.
Yeah, no, of course.
And by classic, the rice balls means awkward because Jim Gray can do it that way. But listen, we appreciate the time. Without question, everybody check out 1050 ESPN Radio from 10 to 12, and of course the Wheelhouse. BT, there's really nobody on the scene in New York right now that lets people get at them quite like you, and that's what we love most about you, because you stand by what you say, and if people have a problem, you stand right up and you go back and forth, and that's what's awesome. Definitely get the most out of all your interviews. I appreciate the advice you gave me the other day on a personal note, and we appreciate the time. So thanks for coming on, man.
Oh, listen, you guys, you know that. Tommy, I've gotten to know you over the past year, and Rice Balls has been one of my men for a long time. I love him. He's a great guy, and it's good. You guys sound good together. So anytime you want to rap, man, if it's Knicks talk or anything about hoops, you know where I am. I'll always happily join you guys. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Brandon. I think also the LJ 4-point play was the day that Bobby Valentine put on the sunglasses, too, in the dugout. Little random facts right there for the KnicksBlog.com.
What are you, Cliff Clavin? What are you, Cliff Clavin?
I just throw out the random facts, man.
Useless knowledge, bro. I like that.
That's why I'm here.
And that's the truth of BT, man. Like, you know, people come on and they fume, and then, you know, that's what sports talk radio is all about. People get all worked up. And
BT's never had anybody fired up. Come on.
But he says, listen, he said, bring it on. I'm standing here waiting for you. You know, I'll let you talk, and then I'll talk, and we'll have a conversation. He's great like that, and of course, he's very gracious in giving us the time, and it's a heck of a way to start. I have to say, though, before we finish, because I did post this on the blog, I want you to
hear. You have a blog, Tommy?
I do, as far as
what's
you know.
That called?
I'm just
messing with you. KnicksBlog.com, obviously everybody knows to check that out.
I have to read a little promo here based on the fact that this is something that I've been working on here over the last couple of days, and
yeah,
I want to
let the listeners know about this.
No question, and I want to reward it.
Huge.
Are we getting any phone calls? What's going on here? Is there anybody
on
the
line? We've had calls throughout the night, but we've had BT on the line. There's a call on the line right now. We could. All right,
so let's stay on the line for a minute. We're gonna do a little trivia here, and again, we talked about it on the blog, and this is definitely a serious promotion. You have to be over 21 because this is the 40-40 club.
Now, do you want me to put this caller on the line right now?
Yeah.
I believe we have a caller.
No, wait, before you put him on the line, we have to come up with a good trivia question that a serious Knicks fan has to answer in order to be able to win, which is, to me, if somebody says to me, here's two free passes to go hang out with some dudes who just got drafted at Jay-Z's club, you know, I'm feeling pretty excited about it, which is exactly what we're trying to give away here. You and a guest to the 40-40 club, thanks to some people who I know who made it happen. And if you want to bring a caller, but first let's come up with a trivia question.
You want to make it 1999 orientated, since 10 years it's 4-point player, 10 years since that spring was a great spring.
Something you can't find on YouTube, something that Knicks fans have to know.
I got one, and if you disagree with it or if it's too hard, let me know. Are you ready? Here's mine, and if you have an idea, throw it to me. Ready?
It's got to be 99-centric, no question.
Okay, here's the question. How many games were left when Ernie Grunfeld was fired? How about that one? Is that a good one?
I think that's definitely fair.
If you're a Knicks fan, you know that because Dave Checkett's traveled with the team, and we know that
Jackson, Phil Jackson era.
Oh, that was the Phil Jackson meeting that, you know, they lied about. So
when I say
you're
era,
a real
you know,
Knicks fan, you know how many games were left when Ernie got fired, because it was like, oh, X amount of games left. And the Knicks were actually, I believe, a half game or a game out of the playoffs when Ernie got fired.
I believe they were also under 500 at the time.
No, I'd do the math. I know they finished 27-23 that season. The day he got fired, the Knicks played the Hornets that night on a Friday night at the Garden. And they won that game. The next game was actually the turnaround game on April 25th versus Miami, when they were down 20-something points, and the Knicks came back and won that game. No, I don't have the schedule in front of me. I just remember that. But
you are good. You're good like that. But I know. From what I recall, was that they were teetering on 500.
No question. No question they were.
Okay. I know the answer. Let's see if this caller knows the answer.
What's going on? Do you know? First of all, who's on the line?
Go ahead, man.
Hey, what's going on? Hello?